Because of our Maquiladora license, our agreement allows us to bring goods into Mexico without paying a duty to Mexico now, right? So then we take that container, we take it to our 3PL, unpack it the same way we would in a domestic 3PL here in the US. It's racked and binned as those daily e-commerce orders are coming in. Let's say there's 100 orders that day. Those 100 orders are individually packaged and boxed and labeled for individuals.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Dast. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
I always work when I'm sick.
We're impressed.
Get up, you. You give me 10 hours of work today.
I'm back in a few hours. I'll be up then.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Mark, who are you going to vote for in the upcoming election? No, don't answer that question. If somebody promises that this whole Chinese tariff thing will end, will you vote for that person? No, don't answer that question. I know where you lean. We don't want to tell people where you lean politically.
We're going to get like an explicit rating on iTunes if we start going into politics. Let's not do that.
Let's not do that at all. I got to tell you, this Chinese imports, the stock market, people's emotions in the internet world and e-commerce world when they're importing, everyone is dealing with it. And actually, beyond e-commerce, I've got a good friend that sells products to Lowe's. And I'm telling you, these companies that are manufacturing, they're talking about how to move their manufacturing facility out of China to another country so that they can import without tariffs. And then they got to say, wait a minute, these tariffs that may not actually happen. And when do you know and how do you do it? And it's a royal pain in the butt. And everybody's up in arms about it. So if anybody, of presidential status is listening, I'm sure you're listening to our podcast, settle it down, get it done, move on so that we can all rest a little bit better at night. So with that said, you've got someone that actually has a loophole of sorts, a perfectly legitimate way to avoid tariffs when importing from China. And you had Bobby on the podcast, right?
Yeah, that's right, Bobby. And tariffs and import duties as well here.
Wow.
Totally legitimate, completely legal, 100% on board. The bad news is if you're doing FBA, probably it's not going to work for you. But if you're doing self-fulfilled e-commerce, will work for you and it will save you an absolute bundle of money. And for buyers out there looking for, what's my angle? Like, how can I buy a business and make it more profitable? Pay attention, because here's an immediate way that you can make your business more profitable by using this method. A pretty simple setup in theory. In practice, it's much more difficult to do. And Bobby's going to go into what they do. He's part of a 3PL. So we do talk a lot about the services his 3PL provides. But what I really wanted to get at is, how does this work where we can avoid these duties and these tariffs? And the analogy he used, or not even an analogy, the example he used is when you go to an airport, you often see duty-free shopping, right? You're able to buy a bottle of liquor and not pay any duty or import fees on that. And so you get good deals. Well, the fact is the government has said that if you're bringing in consumer goods less than $800 across the border, it can be brought in without duties or tariffs. That's fantastic. So what do? He's down in San Diego. They have a fulfillment center in Mexico. They receive everything in California. They bring it down to Mexico. They do all the normal 3PL stuff that you would have done any other way. And then they ship it out from Mexico, and it's duty-free, tariff-free, immediately introduces a significant savings for anyone that's doing e-commerce. Now, again, the logistics of this are more complex. We get into it a little bit. I mean, we're talking about bonded trucks and some inspections and everything else that has to be done. So definitely a specialized service. But one of those low-hanging fruit areas that if you have an e-commerce business where you're doing your own fulfillment or have a warehouse where you're doing fulfillment, it'd be silly to not look into an option like this, because it's a no-brainer.
Like you said, for buyers as well, if you're looking for a bump in equity, you buy a business and you make improvements like this. And if all you're adding is $20,000 to the bottom line, but you bought the business at a 3.5x multiple, you just added $35,000 onto the overall value of your business. It's instant equity. There's a ton of different little things like this. So I'm real excited to listen myself on this one. Although you know, honestly, I like listening to my own podcast more than you. And I know Andrew Yodarian feels the same way. Shout out to you, Andrew. Thanks for listening to me more than Mark. I appreciate that. Thanks so much. One more thing I wanted to say for folks that are event bound. We've got a couple events that we're coming up to. Hopefully this is going to air before both of them. But the first one is the Many Chat event. Mark, you know more about that one than I do because you booked that one. That one is going to be September 13th through the 15th. And it looks like it's going to be attended by Walker, Brad, Chuck, and Chris Moore, who's our director of content. Where's that one going to be? Is it Austin?
I believe that one is Austin. And people who know ManyChat, it's a bot service. So this is a company-sponsored conference, but it looks absolutely phenomenal. I'm excited for this event. It has a good lineup of speakers as well. So we are going to be there, and I figure we'll meet some clients down there as well. So if you're going to be there, or if you just are in the Austin area around that time, let us know.
Yeah, again, yeah, definitely reach out to us. We'd love to get together. Again, it's going to be Brad Walker and Chuck that attend. And then the following week, we're going to be at Brand Accelerator Live, which is Scott Volker's conference, his first one, and it's going to be the 18th to the 20th. I'll be attending that along with Walker, Brad, and Chuck, and our new broker that we haven't talked about yet. And we'll just drop the name here, and then we'll move on to the rest of the podcast. But Chris Guthrie, a well-known name in the industry, he's been buying and selling websites. He's had his own podcast. He's a friend of Quiet Lights, has been for years. He's the newest member of our team, and we'll have him on the podcast shortly as well.
Yeah, super excited to have Chris on the podcast. All right, so why don't we get into the episode this week? Let's talk about duties and tariffs. This is a really specialized episode. It's not going to be as wide-ranging as some of the topics we cover, but hopefully extremely useful.
Let's go to it.
All right, Bobby, thank you so much for joining me. I'm excited to have you on. We had Nathan from Sourcify on. Don't know when that episode aired compared to this one, but probably about a month ago. We're a real professional podcast here. We have our production schedule. It's hanging up on my wall. No, it's not. He had mentioned something in that podcast about duties and importing into Mexico to be able to avoid some of these duties and tariffs. And I found it really, really fascinating. It was an interesting tidbit in there. And then he introduced us. And I think we're going to have a good conversation today. You're with BajaFulfillment.com. Tell us a little bit about what you guys do at Baja Fulfillment, and then we can get into, probably right away, let's get into this idea of how can we cut out some of the costs with duties and tariffs. But let's start out with a background on you and your company.
Sure. So I have a finance background, owned a financial planning company for 15 plus years. Got involved in e-commerce, some time ago, realized the opportunity not only in sales online through e-commerce, but through my friendships and partnerships and clients. In particular, John Borsini, who's the managing partner of the company. His license setup in Mexico, his experience in importing goods from China for the past 30 plus years, he had like the perfect remedy to take advantage of the Section 321. So we just had to partner up, and he and I are partners in the company, two partners in the company, in order to basically match up e-commerce companies that need to take advantage of fulfillment across the border in Mexico, as well as avoid those duties and tariffs. And so that's how it spawned the idea. But that being said, Baja Fulfillment is just directly across the border. I'm in downtown San Diego right now, about 30 minutes to get to our 3PL facility in Tecate, Mexico, just to give you an idea. So I think a lot of people, when they think of border fulfillment, they think it's Mexico City or somewhere really far. I mean, it is literally down the road. Sometimes it may take me longer to get to northern San Diego than it would be to our facility in Tecate, Mexico.
So you're crossing the border, what, daily, weekly?
I'm crossing the border only when I need to, or let's say, bring down a company to tour the facility or take advantage of the 321 savings, which we'll talk about. But I'm only down there if I'm showing clients a facility typically.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right. You've already thrown out the buzzword here, Section 321. It sounds like a countdown. It's not a countdown. It's just kind of random that that's what it is. What is Section 321?
Sure. So Section 321 is Article 321 is a rule that allows us as citizens to bring in up to $800 of goods per person per day from overseas, from any country. And in particular, this is really important for those that are manufacturing in China because of all the punitive tariffs and the heavy duties in a lot of the categories that people like to buy online. So that being said, Section 321 again allows us to utilize that rule to bring goods into the U.S. without paying those duties on those goods. And for e-commerce companies, it's obviously a pretty big deal.
Yeah, the way you described it to me just before this podcast, that we hit record, you go to an airport and you can buy something duty-free, no taxes or anything else. And the limit you said is $800. A person can buy up to $800 and bring it across the border?
Yes, that's the rule. It's $800. It used to be $200. It was raised in 2016 to $800. So that's important to know for e-commerce companies, specifically that are B2C, because most of the companies that I know that I order from online, and I would say about 90% of those companies that exist, if not more, have an average order value of less than $800.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. But
yeah,
help me through this. So
sure.
Well, a couple questions. First of all, where are we putting the dollar amount? Is it retail value or is it wholesale value?
That's correct. Retail value.
Retail value. All right.
Yeah.
And then in order to do this, you have to be doing your own fulfillment from the Mexico location.
Is that— yeah. So I'll walk you kind of through what a normal e-commerce company is probably doing today. And the only difference if they were to utilize a company like Baja Fulfillment in rerouting a container. So what it looks like now is, we had a big event yesterday, brought some customers down, or potential customers, I should say. Let's take one who's an apparel brand. They're a performance apparel brand. Performance apparel in general is going to be in the highest duty category without the punitive tariffs. So even if those get negotiated away, which I know some people are really hoping that happens, and maybe it will, maybe it won't, that's fine. But the duties that people are used to paying before all this Trump punitive tariff stuff, that's not going anywhere. So let's just take apparel again, specifically sports apparel. They're paying about 33% on most of their garments in duties, and that is on the cost of the good, right? So if I buy a pair of pants, like a performance pair of pants, for $100 retail, they're probably paying $30 cost in China to get that made. I'm just assuming something like that. If they're paying 33% duties on that $30 cost, there's about a $10 fee that they got to pay just to get that pair of pants into the U.S.
Right.
So what they're doing now is what they have been used to doing is ordering, let's say, 10,000 pairs of pants, putting it into a container, bringing that container overseas, and let's say it's going to hit the port of Long Beach. That container is then picked up by their trucking company and sent to their 3PL in the U.S. Once that container hits the 3PL in the U.S., it's unloaded, racked and binned inside that 3PL that they're paying currently to do their pick and pack. As those daily orders come in, those orders are boxed, picked, packed, boxed, labeled, and shipped out to their customers every single day. But remember, when that container hit the port in the U.S., they had to pay the duties and the tariffs to release that container, right? Mm-hmm. That is money they will never see again. That's what most companies are doing today. The difference is in how you take advantage of the Section 321 is we don't interrupt the supply chain whatsoever. You still have your same manufacturers. You still have all your same factories. The only difference is when that container hits the port, this is really important to understand. When the container hits the port, we pick up that container with a trucking company in bond, with a bonded carrier. So the bonded carrier takes that container, but it doesn't actually clear customs. So there's no duties paid. There's no tariffs paid because it's picked up in bond by a bonded carrier. That same day brought down to our Tecate facility, which again is about 2.5 hours from Long Beach. That container is brought into Mexico. But remember, we're crossing countries now, right? It came from China. We didn't clear customs in the U.S., but we have control of the container. We brought it into Mexico because of our Maquiladora license, which is very critical to understand. Because of our Maquiladora license, our agreement allows us to bring goods into Mexico without paying a duty to Mexico now. Right. So then we take that container, we take it to our 3PL, unpack it the same way we would in a domestic 3PL here in the U.S. It's racked and binned as those daily e-commerce orders are coming in. Let's say there's 100 orders that day. Those 100 orders are individually packaged and boxed and labeled for individuals. And that, as long as the average order value is less than $800, it is put on a specific truck for Section 321 crossing back into the U.S. for less than $800 per package. And so that's how you get around paying the duties and the tariffs legally.
Yeah. What sort of oversight or auditing gets done during this process? I mean, you've described a fairly complex process that needs to be followed by the rules. And I'm sure in practice, when you're doing it, it's probably not as complex as it might sound just on the surface. What sort of oversight do you guys have to deal with, and what sort of problems are retailers experiencing, if any, with this?
With the program, the Section 321 program?
Yeah.
The big challenge that we have, if I would call it that, is I think people want us to solve the duties for all of their items, you know, for in particular wholesale, in particular FBA or fulfilled by Amazon, right? You can't avoid the duties if we're bringing stuff back from Mexico into the US and it's over $800. So if you want to ship to, you know, FBA fulfillment center, that wouldn't qualify. It's only for the B2C. So I think that's a challenge, if any, from an understanding more than an actual execution of the strategy, because it is what it is. That's the rule. We brought in customs brokers, customs agents to sign off on this. We've done our research over the last several years, so it's not something we just thought of lately. We've had that maquiladora license for 19 years. We've had the factory down in Mexico for 19 years, which started out as a T-shirt screen print facility. So we're bringing goods into the U.S. and bring it down to Mexico without paying those duties for the last two decades.
Wow. And now you got your start outside of e-commerce, right? You were working and doing fulfillments for some pretty large companies that were utilizing this.
Yes. Yeah, so we still have our own brands personally, not e-commerce, but more so in retail stores. And we still have a very robust T-shirt operation, a screen print operation. We have the capability and capacity to print out about 50,000 shirts a day. So 250,000 units a week we're able to do it in our facility still, which kind of happens to be, you know, not to make this a commercial, but it kind of happens to be a big value add for a lot of companies that come on board with us from the fulfillment standpoint, just because they're avoiding, you know, in some cases, millions of dollars in duties. But also they already do T-shirts and they get imprinted somewhere else or screen printed somewhere else. And so it's nice to have it like get walked over from one section to another and put right into their stock.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's where we got started, again, with our own brands that we still have and we also do, you know, licensing and printing. And one of our big flagship companies is Funko. They're a $1 billion public company. They didn't even have an apparel line until they started working with us.
That's great. What I love about this is, I know a lot of people listening to this podcast have some goal or some mindset to buy an e-commerce business. Now, granted, a lot of them are doing FBA, and you know, it doesn't sound like that works in that model. You can't do FBA. But if you're going to do fulfilled by merchant, you know, this is one way to juice that ROI on the acquisition pretty quickly because you're cutting out significant costs. What are we looking at? I mean, you broke down one category, but on average, what sort of savings are you guys seeing for people that are using this Mexico routed fulfillment chain?
Sure. So it's funny because this is a conversation I started having about a month ago when I was bringing down some customers that, in my opinion, were the perfect fit. You know, their e-commerce business was like the exact fit. And there was, I could see, you know, a little bit of hesitation for one reason or another, you know, whatever it may be. I think the big one is people will just want to make sure it actually works. You know, we're doing it for several companies and have been for a while. So it does work. And we're not the only one doing it. You know, it's not something we created. It's being done right now. We have competitors, you know. I just think we're the best, obviously. But when I started seeing people hesitating, I thought to myself, like, for one, I'm putting them in the not so smart category. Just because why would you not want to save 70% of your duties, especially if it, you know, we're talking being able to save, you know, in some cases, millions of dollars a year. That's true bottom line profit, right? But I started thinking to myself, why wouldn't I start acquiring these companies that aren't taking advantage of this? Buy it, reroute containers, have it fulfilled, and save 70% of our duties. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is already that much more profitable, and turn around and sell it. You know, so from an acquisition, a buy sell, to me, it just seems like the proverbial no-brainer. So answering your question, the case study we did recently was on a performance brand company. They were shipping approximately 250,000 units a year. When I say units, I mean actual like units of goods, not shipments. And their savings was close to $3 million. So, you know, they're probably a $25, $30 million revenue company. Mm-hmm. Which that saves them about 10% of their gross revenue. So
wow! I mean that's some significant savings that you're going through there.
Yeah, it's massive. Yeah, It's massive. The easy way to look at it, sorry to interrupt, but the easy way to look at it, honestly, is to look at either your past 12 months of what you paid in duties and tariffs, deduct 70%. That's the new number you would be paying, that 30% number, because there is a cost for us to implement that strategy, right? It's got to be very specific. It's got to be airtight. We have to have dedicated trucks, et cetera, that need to be only Section 321 that cross the border. So there is a process. There is a fee for that. But the savings is massive. And so that's the number I look at. And then you can also forecast moving forward. Okay, this is what we did the last 12 months, but we're going to 2X our company. We're going to 3X our company in the next 12 months. Well, that's a way to look at that. You know, and so again, from an acquisition standpoint, I would like to look at all the companies that don't take advantage of this and like to buy them and resell them.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyone that is fulfilled by merchant, if you're doing fulfilled by merchant, or if you're not on Amazon, for that matter, obviously that would be another option. So pretty phenomenal. I love this whole topic of just general savings in general for your supply chain and your fulfillment chain. Because when you're looking at a complex asset like an online business, you have so many different moving parts, and it can be a little difficult to find out where you should attack first to try and get more bottom line profit. The Section 321 revelation for me, I love this, and hopefully, you know, some people here, that's the first time they're hearing about it. What other things can we look at here for optimizing the supply chain, or rather fulfillment chain costs? I imagine this is your wheelhouse, right? This is what you do. Where have you seen some easy wins for people?
I want to backtrack just a tad too on the FBA, because if you're an FBA only business, we're not going to be a good fit. It doesn't mean we don't do FBA prep. We do. Obviously, I don't know many e-commerce companies that are not some way selling on Amazon. You know, very few. So we still do it. It's just not, if you're only doing that, we're not going to be a good fit. So if you have like a 50-50 split, of course, and if you're doing wholesale, absolutely. You know, we have plenty of companies that are in, have their own retail footprint, as well as, you know, into their, we got to send to their distributors and wholesale, et cetera. So that still wouldn't fall under that category of the Section 321, but anything B2C inside of your guys's, or I should say the e-commerce companies, you know, sales channels, that would qualify. So, and we're going to be cheaper on the FBA prep most likely anyway, you know, less expensive. Just wanted to clarify that. And as far as the supply chain thing, like you were saying, there's nothing you can do, especially if you're being hit, in particular backpacks, duffel bags, luggage. They got hit with that extra 25% duty, the punitive tariff that went into effect. So they're already in roughly, you know, I think paying 17% in duties plus 25. So they're in the 42, 43% category on their cost of good tax.
Yeah.
If, and so where can you go in your supply chain and say, I need to reduce it by 25%, by 50%, by 70%. You can't go to your carrier and get cheaper shipping. You can't go to your manufacturer and say, look, I need you guys to cut my prices in half. It just can't be done, right? So you got to bite the bullet or you're going to go out of business, especially because you can't raise the prices on your customer either, right? And in particular, if you've already sold the goods, which we've had actually happen on some Kickstarter campaigns. Companies have done Kickstarter campaigns. They've had some, you know, some big orders to fill. They bought it at one price, sold it at one price, and then the tariffs went in, and if those goods aren't here yet, guess what? They're going to get taxed when they do get here. So from a supply chain standpoint, there's not much you can do in order to be able to shave off that kind of money and that those kinds of savings. But from a fulfillment, getting back to your more recent question, I guess, from a supply chain standpoint, on the fulfillment side, the biggest savings, again, we're going to move the needle the most in the Section 321 savings. That's what I tell a lot of people is like, look, if you want to do fulfillment in Mexico and move your fulfillment to Mexico, it's not a bad idea because the cost savings on just the straight fulfillment, just just pick and pack, is going to be about 40% less expensive because fulfillment has two real hard costs, right? Every 3PL has two hard costs. It's real estate, the cost to warehouse it, and then labor. So if we're in Tecate in Mexico, and our labor, you know, we pay our workers well, and we have, you know, I think 250 employees, and our warehousing is a lot less than here is domestically. Of course, our pick and pack, you know, fees are going to be a lot less as well. So, obviously, it's a win-win. But that to me is just a cherry on top. If I save people 40, 50 cents a dollar a package on pick and pack, great. But if I'm saving them $7, $8, $10 per item in duties, that's going to move the needle for them. I just try to warn people about looking at, you know, are you going to save me, you know, 10 cents in a pick and pack fee versus what are we really looking at? Where's the needle going to be moved? You know, and so that's what I really try to hit home for people on.
Yeah, no, in the whole supply chain argument, when you look at it from, you know, cost here and your cost there, I find a lot of people try and save their money in areas that are really relationship based, right? They squeeze their supplier or they squeeze some other group. And, you know, when Nathan was on the podcast, we talked about that a little bit, how, you know, that can set up a bad situation where, you know, if you squeeze that supplier has to find another way to get their margin as well. And so it's, you know, not that you should be overpaying for your products, but keeping that relationship rich, making sure that you're protecting them quite a bit can help your business. So find the areas where there's not a relationship, and no one here really has a relationship with the government, right? I think most people are just fine with us taking you know, some savings on that whole process. Let's talk about location. You know, when I hear about, you know, fulfillment, you know, 3PL, I think middle of the country, right? How does being located in Mexico, granted you're, you know, stone's throw away from the states here, but how does that impact shipping times and the ripple effect that that would have on customer service, and especially, you know, if you have an Amazon seller doing fulfilled by merchant as opposed to FBA, what impact does that have?
Sure. So we obviously have negotiated rates with FedEx, and with we have a really strong program that has 3-day guarantee through the USPS anywhere in the country. And to be clear, when we bring those items, those orders across from Mexico into the US, those packages and those orders that day for that company are dropped off at the carrier directly. And we have a 10 a.m. SLA, so service level agreement, right? If orders are in by 10 a.m., that order is coming from Mexico into the US that day and getting shipped that day. So it's just as comparable as being in a domestic 3PL. Granted, yeah, I think some people believe that if I have my 3PL in the middle of the country, right in Texas, let's say, that's going to be a good thing because then my East Coast and my West Coast are going to be split. But I can promise you that there is a major delay in getting that container from the coast to the center of the country. Plus, there's a higher cost to do that, right? So whereas for us, it's a 2.5-hour drive from the port of Long Beach into Tecate, Mexico. And if our orders are coming over same day or even sometimes next day with 2 or 3 day guarantee, there's no real disruption to the customer experience. All the returns go to our facility in San Diego, if the customer chooses, obviously. Some e-commerce companies prefer to do their own returns, which is perfectly fine by us. But we have warehouses in San Diego too. That's our parent company. But all the labels show ship from San Diego. So that's a really big detail that I think a lot of e-commerce companies don't want their clients or their customers to know, like, was this shipped from Mexico? No, it's not shipped from Mexico. It's packaged and labeled in Mexico with a UPS, FedEx, or USPS label showing a San Diego address as far as return and where it came from. So I think that's pretty critical to understand as well.
Yeah. So how long have you guys been doing the e-commerce side of things?
Well, we've been doing e-commerce for 3 years, but we've been testing this out for 2 of those 3 years before we really launched it, mainly because we knew it existed. Again, competitors have been doing this for a long time, but we, like most people, I think we're almost too good to be true. It's like, hold on, you're telling me that if I'm paying X for my duties, I don't have to pay that anymore. And so we had a lot of test runs. We had a lot of brokers agents, a lot of customers brokers come into our facility and say, are we doing this the right way? And again, it's all in the code for what the rules are. It's allowed, right? What they're looking for is when people are doing fictitious addresses and names to try to get underneath that radar, right? But everything is already cleared through customs prior to it leaving our facility to go across the border in those daily trips. So our Section 321 specific trucks already have all the criteria that is required before it even hits the border.
That's absolutely fascinating. Well, this has been enlightening, just to say the least. How long, remind me, you said the limit raised to $800 from $200. When was that?
2016.
Okay.
And yeah, then, I can share some information on that as well.
Yeah, that'd be good. And we can link to it in the show notes. And then before that, it was $200 for what, for history? Or how often does that change?
I don't know. It's only gone up that I know of, but the $800 limit is obviously newer. And actually, this reminds me, I want to talk a little bit about the FBA side. I forgot to mention this, but from a cash flow perspective, you know, companies say, oh man, what I really want to avoid it on my FBA or my, again, my wholesale or whatever, my retail footprint so that I got to send all my stuff to. And the reality is we can't, right? We're following the rules, very stringent, you know, very stringent rules that we need to follow. And so we're not going to go around that. However, from a cash flow perspective, it does help companies because remember, those duties are not due until it crosses back into the US. So when that container comes from China into Long Beach, the duties aren't due at that point, right? They're not due when we bring them into Mexico. So let's say that container, half of it's for the B2C business and the other half is FBA. Well, the FBA part won't be due until we bring it back into the US from Mexico. So from a cash flow perspective, you can actually kind of kick the can down the road a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it does help. So I think that's a big thing. I got off my path. Sorry, what were you asking me exactly again?
I actually don't remember, but the point that I would just piggyback on that, I mean, one of the number one problems with Amazon businesses, specifically FBA, is trying to guess the inventory levels properly, you know, estimate them properly, and then estimate that long lead time. So in theory, somebody could use your facility as a holding service and kick that can, as you said, down the road on some of the costs of doing that. The objection, and I mean, you really have to look at how the numbers play out for each business, but in theory, you could ship that in to your facility a little bit more than you would normally have, and then only incur that extra cost from the duties once you move it into FBA. So that would be an interesting analysis just to see if you can smooth out that inventory issue that so many companies have.
Yeah, I mean, we're not in the business of storing inventory, you know, but it's something that we have as a value add for our customers that do have the B2C business. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, so that, no question.
That makes sense. What haven't I asked or what haven't we talked about with this?
Gosh, I mean, you know, I think people are pleasantly surprised and understanding when they actually visit a facility. I think it's important to know that, again, this isn't new. Big brands have been doing this for a very long time. Bose, Panasonic, they're directly across the border in Tijuana. We are not in Tijuana. We are in Tecate, Mexico. Big difference. And if you haven't been to Mexico, you would know immediately the difference. Not to say Tijuana is bad, but again, Bose is there. Panasonic is there. Two pretty big brands, and they fulfill out of Mexico. So I think that's, again, important to know. And I think it's important to know that these are the rules, and this is the rules that we're playing by. And I think it goes back to your question, how often do the limits change, 200 to 800? You know, if things were to change, let's say they go down to 400 or back to 200 again, I still think most companies don't have an average order value of over $200, but I don't expect that to go anywhere. But if it did, that just means anything above that, you'd pay duties, right? Mm-hmm. So I think just adding... One of the other discussions I have quite often is competitive advantage. You know, if you are a company working with us in a space that has a high duty, or let's say a high punitive tariff, and you're working with us avoiding 70% of those duties and tariffs, and you have a major competitive advantage from a revenue standpoint, if everything else is equal, revenue, sales, et cetera, right? Now you have $2-3 million to either allocate towards ad spend, R&D, a retail footprint. So if you're not doing it, to me, again, you're putting yourself at a huge competitive disadvantage, because we're not talking about, you know, saving, you know, 0.5% on revenue here. It's a big number.
Yeah, absolutely. Bobby, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing this with us. This has been, again, completely enlightening for me. And I'm sure you're going to get some calls. Where can people reach you if they want to learn more about this?
Sure. So obviously, BajaFulfillment.com is our main site there. They can inquire, and our VP of sales or one of our sales members will get back to them immediately. We usually return emails within the hour. Pretty good about that. If people want to reach out to me directly, that's fine too. It's Bobby@BajaFulfillment.com. B-O-B-B-Y, not I-E.
Not I-E. I wouldn't even presume an I-E on the end of that. Hey, thanks so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. I hope it helps.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light Content Team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.